Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Breaking Free with psychotherapist Lori Coburn on the Poetic Energy Network Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, we will be talking about soulmate myths. There are lots of myths around soulmates, such as living happily ever after and you won't have to fight and you'll get along. But a lot of those are not true. I'm speaking from my experience as a psychotherapist, as a soulmate seeker myself, as well as having talked to many other people who have met their soulmates. Please call in with your questions at area code 917-932-8881. I'd like to start out with one of the biggest myths about soulmates that's out there. And that is that soulmates love each other unconditionally. Something that I have read in soulmate books is that if there is abuse in your relationship, if there is your soulmate is hurting you or you're hurting them, then they can't really be your soulmate, because that would never happen with soulmates. I don't agree with that. I don't think that's true at all. I think the people that write that may be some of the lucky ones, some of the ones who have evolved enough to be at the place where they are in a highly spiritual, highly evolved relationship, where they do come from a place of their higher self, a place of love. In that case, it's true. In our souls, we would never, ever hurt our soulmate or our twin flame. However, most of us are not that evolved. Most of us still have quite a bit of ego attached to our personas. And when we're coming from ego, we do hurt our soulmates. We hurt ourselves. We hurt our soulmates. We hurt everyone around us. That's because the ego is judgment. The ego is fear. The ego is attack. What do I mean by ego versus higher self? The ego self is the self, the hat that we wear every day, during the day. It's our persona. It's our personality. It's what we think of as, I've accomplished this in my lifetime. Or I am the daughter or the son of so-and-so. I am the spouse of somebody else. I work at this job. I have this many children. I've accomplished this in my life. That's the ego persona. All of that is an illusion. All of that is unreal. All of that is a passing phenomenon. These bodies come and go. These personalities come and go. They are not reality. We are living a dream. We're dreaming this life on earth. And we are not these bodies walking around here. We think we are. And when we forget that we are truly the higher self, the one higher self with which we are all connected as that one, when we forget that and we think that we're these small selves, these ego personalities, we're simply like robots. We're pre-programmed. It's like a movie that's already been filmed, a script that's already been written. But we walk around thinking, I'm doing this, and I'm doing that, and I want to create this, and I don't want to create that. That is what I mean by the ego. The ego can also be what we would call a nice ego or a spiritualized ego. And that's the side of ourselves when we act nice and we act friendly, but inside we still have judgment. we're taught not to judge. We're taught to be kind to our neighbors. But every single one of us has been nice on the surface while underneath judging. We all do it. It's just what the ego does. The ego is judgment. But the good news is the ego is false. The ego is nothing. It is completely and wholly unreal. You have never been born. You can never die. And so you may say, well, then who is it that's listening to this? And who are you that's talking? The you that's listening to this, the me, quote unquote, that's talking, is part of the illusion, is part of the dream. And the dream can reflect fear, which would be the ego mind, or it can reflect love, which would be the mind of God, the higher vision, right-minded vision, the Holy Spirit, higher self, divinity, Christ self, beingness, whatever you want to call it, it doesn't matter. So we have two thought systems running. We have the ego thought system, and we have the right-minded thought system. And we are always at choice. We are the observer of those two thought systems. We are the observer of the dream. You individually are your own witness, your own observer, and you have only one choice to make in the world as you see it. You choose between the ego's thought system and the right-minded thought system. You choose between fear and you choose between love. Or you may say, well, wait a minute. Don't I choose the clothes I wear? Don't I choose how many children I want to have? Don't I choose what I'm eating? Don't I choose the job I go to? Not really. The dream is a dream that's already happened. It's done. It's over. Time doesn't really exist. You, the witness, the observer, are outside of space and time, choosing. And so what seems to be a choice in the dream really is not a choice at all. And that's a kind of a confusing thought that took me about 4 years to get what I just told you. But when you turn your mind over to the higher mind, it starts becoming clear to you. You might say, well, then what does all of this have to do with soulmates? What in the world does the ego, the higher self, have to do with soulmates? And what does it have to do with the myth that soulmates love each other unconditionally? What it has to do is that from the place of our soul, from the place of our higher mind, the right mind, soulmates do indeed love each other unconditionally. However, from the place of our smaller self, our ego self, soulmates hate each other because the ego hates and judges everyone. That's not a pretty statement, and it's not something most of us want to look at. But it is what goes on all the time. And if we have the honesty to look at that part of ourselves and to say, wow, I really hate my soulmate. I really want to get rid of my soulmate. I want to attack my soulmate. Then you're getting honest. And then you have the ability to choose differently. You have the ability to choose from love. And when you're constantly choosing from love, then soulmates love each other unconditionally and can make it work. But just because you've met your soulmate or you've met somebody who you fall in love with and you know they're your other half, you know that in your being they're a part of you, does not automatically make that happen. So that is probably the biggest myth about soulmates, that they love each other unconditionally, and once they meet, that works out. We're on Blog Talk Radio with the Poetic Energy Network. This is Breaking Free with psychotherapist Lori Coburn, and tonight we're talking about soulmate myths. The call-in number for your questions is 917-932-8881. And my website is LoriCoburn.com. That's Lori with two R's, L-O-R-R-I, Coburn, C-O-B-U-R-N. Getting back to the soulmates love each other unconditionally myth, in the ego thought system, it's actually filled with total attack. And the way we get to the right-minded, true love system within us is by facing down all of our hatred. My partner and I are soulmates, and we have been together for 12 years. And just this past week, we got into a fight. And in that fight, both he and I jumped right into the ego thought system. And we were both pretty much ready to pack our bags and walk out the door with a big F you. We jumped right in there. And that was because I did something that he didn't like, and I wasn't meeting his needs. And he did something I didn't like, and he wasn't meeting my needs. And what the ego does with soulmates is it says, you are there as a special partner for me, and you will fulfill all of my needs. And as long as you do that, I will love you. But the minute you don't do that, I hate you. Where do you think the 50% divorce rate comes in? It comes from that half of our mind, the ego mind that just wants to attack and bolt out the door or rip things to shreds the minute it doesn't get its own way. And we're all really ugly like this deep down. We just don't want to admit it. But we have to admit it. It's embarrassing every time we admit it. But if we go deeply and we look inside, what we then do when we see that ego thought system of attack and hatred running, we forgive it. Forgiveness is the key to making soulmate relationships last forever. When I first was in this relationship with my partner of 12 years, I tried all of the communication techniques that I learned as a psychotherapist, and none of them worked. I think that's because I was supposed to learn this other lesson, that forgiveness is the thing that works in relationships and deep down gets past all of the ego guilt and shame. We find our soulmates and we choose to live with them because magically they are going to make us happy. They are going to fulfill our dreams. They're going to give us everything that mommy and daddy never gave us. And then, after the honeymoon phase wears out, the power struggle comes in. And here we are with this person who disappoints us just like mom and dad did. And that's when we hate them. I have a good friend who said, until I admitted how much I hate my husband, I couldn't truly love him. That sounds like a really absurd statement. And it does. To the average person who pushes down the ego side and doesn't want to look at it, looking at our hatred for ourselves and our soulmate is abominable. It's quite embarrassing. Every time my partner and I get in a fight and I look at how frickin' vicious and ugly we both are, it is so embarrassing and mortifying. But when I can say, that's just the ego. That is just this dream figure named Lori who's running around running this script of thinking that she lives this life and wants to get this and that out of this life. And that's just the script and the robot that's running the program. And it means nothing. That's not who I am. I am the one self. And I choose to forgive that hatred. I choose to forgive my belief in the ego. I choose to forgive all the illusions that I made up. What happens when we do that is we automatically move into our right-mindedness. We move into our higher self. We are the love that we seek in our soulmates. We're it. We're seeking for it outside of ourselves. And when that person takes away that love, when that person doesn't admire us the way we want them to, when that person calls us a name, when that person doesn't support us in our dreams and our beliefs and our visions, when that person doesn't support our own self-image and calls us a fool or a jerk or calls us on our own crap, we don't like that person anymore, because no longer are they propping up this image that we have of ourselves that we're good people and that we're lovable. Flip side, underneath that image that we want to prop up of the ego, that we're good people, that we're nice, underneath that is this seething, boiling, roiling guilt and shame that we all have. It doesn't matter what kind of childhood you had. You have shame and guilt just for feeling like you're a person in this world who has to be separate from other people and compete for scarce resources. And so it doesn't matter if you've found this person who's your soulmate. When that person upsets you or hurts you or hurts your image, you are going to attack that person. But what are you really doing? When you're attacking the other person, you're really attacking yourself. Your soulmate is truly, on a soul level, one of your best friends, because that person is mirroring all the things that you can't look at in yourself. So if we look at the myth that soulmates are going to live happily ever after, happily ever after, and love each other unconditionally, no way. Because we all have parts of ourselves that absolutely hate ourselves, but we don't want to look at them. So we feel bad, and we project it onto our partner and say, "You made me do this. You make me feel bad about myself." Let's take, for example, a man who feels like he is a good provider, and his wife complains that she doesn't have enough money to get the things she wants. Man automatically goes into shame. "I'm not a good enough provider." And she may be blaming him. She may be feeling shame that she isn't good enough without buying those things for herself, or she may be feeling guilty that she should make more money herself and buy them herself, or she may be feeling dissatisfied with life and put it on, "Oh, I need this new thing here or there, and that'll make me feel better," when really that's not it. We only make ourselves feel better by recognizing our true self. That's the only true joy in the world. But we scurry around looking for things outside of ourselves to fill us up. So she complains, "I don't have the money for this." He moves into shame. She's into shame by blaming him. And then they both feel ashamed. Now, they could be soulmates. They could have this deep bond with each other. And yet here they are attacking each other. And he could come back and say, "All you ever do is complain. You don't appreciate anything I do." And she could say, "Yes, I do. I appreciate so much. You're a good dad. You're a good provider. I'm just upset that I don't have this." She may be thinking she's upset because she doesn't have this. But truly, when we move to our higher self, identification with that one self instead of the ego self that thinks it needs this and that in the world, that thinks it needs homes and cars and money and all these things to get by in the world. Remember, that's the dream. That's the illusion. Our true self, our higher self, knows that we are home with our source, which is love. You can call it God, you can call it heaven, you can call it the divine, the universe. Our true self needs nothing. And the ego self quickly jumps up and says, but I have to support myself in this world. Your true self knows that as you forgive your belief in your false self, everything you need will be met. And then apply that to your soulmate. When you forgive your soulmate for what you think he or she has done, that returns you to your true self. So in my case, when I tried to get my partner to communicate with me in the way I wanted him to, when I applied the ways of the world which said, let's compromise on this. You tell me your feelings and needs, and I'll tell you my feelings and needs, and we'll compromise, and everything will be A-okay. He said, no way, I don't want to do that, I don't believe in that. Why don't you just be quiet about that and let me be me? And I got fuming mad. This soulmate of mine was not being the good soulmate that I expected. I wanted him to sit down and communicate with me in the ways that I was used to. I wanted him to share words with me because I'm a words person. I'm a writer. I'm a speaker. I talk a lot. He didn't want to do that. And so I hated him. That blasted man who can't possibly be my soulmate because he's not being loving and kind to me in the ways that I want him to be. I attacked him, and then he attacked me back. He attacked me back with, you think you know everything. It's always got to be your way, which he knew what my Achilles' heels were because I didn't think it had to be my way. In fact, I wanted to compromise. And wasn't I a big, good, decent person to compromise? So when our soulmate mirrors to us things that we don't want to see or doesn't give us what we want or what we think will make us happy in the world, I thought what would make me happy in the world was being able to have these deep conversations with my soulmate. He didn't want to have them. So I got mad. So did I love him unconditionally? Was I letting him be himself? No, I wasn't. And yet he is my soulmate. This man, on a soul level, him for me and me for him, are there in each other's lives to give each other the biggest gift we could possibly get. And that is enlightenment. Returning our awareness to our true identity as part of God, as part of the universe, as the higher self. We could communicate all we want on this level. We could give buy each other all the things we want, give each other all the things, go to places like he could go to me with my, go with me to my events, and I could go with him to his events. And we could deep down go, ah, this is boring, I don't want to go, but he's my soulmate and I want to do this with him because I want to make him happy. But truly deep down, is that what's making you happy? No. What really makes you happy is recognizing who you really are, identifying with your true self as love, being the love that you seek, recognizing your divinity. That is the only way you become happy, because you're happiness itself. Then you don't need it from your soulmate. You don't seek it from your soulmate, and you can let your soulmate be who he or she is without needing to grab them by the shoulders and shake them to change them. That's true love. That's true freedom. When you recognize that love is not outside of you, that your real soulmate is yourself, your higher self. And granted, we do have soulmates at this level who give us the big forgiveness lessons that we need to learn here. That's why they're our soulmates. They are our best friends on a soul level. Your soulmate can actually be someone with whom you have a tremendous amount of conflict. So again, contrary to the ideas, the myths, that your soulmate will make you happy, once you find your soulmate, you will live happily ever after. Soulmates automatically love each other unconditionally. Soulmates automatically know how to get along with each other. The myth that if there's any abuse in your relationship, you must not be a soulmate. They're not true. They're just not true. In fact, I think it's truer to say you will fight with your soulmate. You will hate your soulmate on some level. You will attack your soulmate. And unless you look at that ego part of yourself and you recognize it, you admit that as the observer of your dream, as the observer of the world's dream, that you're actually choosing that small ego self. You're choosing to be that small ego self over choosing to be the true divine self. What a trade-off that is, huh? You're being nothing and giving up everything in order to hang on to your small self needs. Why do we do that? Well, we do that because we think we're these bodies that have these small self needs. And that's another thing that happens when we meet our soulmate. This body has met another body that it can completely join with and be one with that other body. And sometimes the physical closeness of the wonderful sex that you can have with your twin flame or your soulmate, that other half of your soul, is at this level phenomenal. It can be fabulous. You go around feeling on top of the world. It really is one of the nicest things you can get at this level. But does it last? Who of us wants to have sex all day long, except in our dreams? If we had sex all day, every day, like in our dreams, sometimes we say, oh, I could just lay in bed with you and have sex all the time, over and over, like when we fall in love and we have sex 5 times a day. We really don't want that. But in our dreams, sometimes we think, oh, if I'm with my soulmate, we'll just have sex all the time, and we'll just be in fairyland all the time, and we'll be doing all these things together, and it'll always be walking on clouds. And we know in another place of us that that's just absolutely not true. Being with your soulmate is really wonderful. Yet, you need to be with your soulmate in truth, in your true self. That is what's truly wonderful. When you choose the soulmate, when you choose the higher self, rather, over the ego self, that is when you feel good. That is when love comes in. And that is what the soulmate relationship is for. It's to make us grow into our divinity, into our higher self. This is Blog Talk Radio, the Poetic Energy Network, breaking free with psychotherapist Lori Coburn. And tonight we are talking about myths about soulmate relationships. The call-in number is 917-932-8881. My website is loricoburn.com. That's Lori with two R's, L-O-R-R-I, Coburn, C-O-B-U-R-N. And we welcome your calls or welcome you to go on the chat room and leave your comments there. Tonight I read this article on Richard Bach. That's the guy who wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull, if you're to remember the 70s, and remember how popular that book was. Jonathan Livingston Seagull was about breaking out of that small self-identity and moving in to your higher self. If you remember the story, it was just this small little book that just was a bestseller. It sold millions, I believe. And Richard Bach went on to write quite a few other books, several of them about his soulmate relationships. But Jonathan Livingston Seagull was a story about the ego self as opposed to the higher self. And this Jonathan Livingston Seagull, he was just one of many, many seagulls, and he was just like all the other ones. And he didn't want to fly free and be independent and do things his own way because he was afraid of leaving the flock. He was afraid of soaring to the greatest heights that he could possibly soar to. But then he broke free. And that's when he became his higher self. And the reason that book sold so many copies is that every single one of us is Jonathan Livingston Seagull. We know that these ego selves of ours, these judgmental, attacking, unforgiving, these small personality selves that think that it's something outside of us, meeting a soulmate, getting that promotion, making enough money, or doing that certain thing in life that we want to do, that is what's going to make us happy. Somewhere deep inside, we know that that's a lie. That's the lie that the ego self perpetuates. And by looking at the lie and calling it a lie, calling it for what it is, looking at all of our guilt and fear when we feel like these small selves, because when we're these small selves, we feel guilty. We feel icky. We feel like we have to compete with other people for that particular job or that particular adulation, or we want to be number one in this, and then, of course, where does that leave everybody else? Leaves them less than you. And then you feel guilty for that. So if you get to number one, which is what our culture always promotes, you have to be number one. You have to make the most money. You have to have the most accomplishments. You have to be the best mom or the best worker or the best friend or the best something. And if you're not, you're nothing. So it's all or nothing. That's what the ego self does. It makes us feel like crap. And the same thing with our soulmate relationships. Wow, I found my soulmate. I am cool. All these people want to find their soulmates, and I did it. And they didn't. But guess what? The minute you think like that, there's another part of you that feels awful because you're separating from everybody else. And then you can try to spiritualize the ego and say, oh, I shouldn't judge. I shouldn't feel like that. I want everybody to have their soulmate. I want everybody to live happily ever after. All of that, all of those things about quickly brushing over our attack thoughts, brushing over our guilt, they don't undo the guilt. What we need to do is look that ego thought system, that attacking, unforgiving, judgmental thought system right in the eye and say, I don't like you, and I am choosing differently. I am choosing love. I am not choosing you. However, choosing to be nice, to put frosting over a cake of hatred, that doesn't work. Choosing to spiritualize the ego and say, no, I really am a really nice person, instead of looking at the side of you that is really hateful. You're both. Your ego personality is both. You are hateful and you are nice. And both of them are false. And that's why forgiving, which means looking at it and letting it go, calling it what it is, calling it a dream, calling it an illusion, is the only thing that works. And when that comes up in your soulmate relationship, forgiving this person that you thought was wonderful and now proves to just be like every other person you've ever met. You thought this soulmate was different. You thought this was your ticket. You thought you were home free when you met this person. this person was so incredibly wonderful, so unlike all the other relationships you ever had. Now it's heaven from here on. And then you find that this person disappoints you just like every other human being on the planet. So this myth that a soulmate will not disappoint us, or a soulmate will make us happy, or once we find our soulmate, we'll live happily ever after, is not true. But the good news is you can live happily ever after. And when you live with a soulmate that you have forgiven, that you have chosen to see only the true self in that soulmate, no matter how many times they disappoint you, and they will disappoint you a lot. Once you live with that love and that forgiveness, then you live happily ever after. Now, Richard Bach, who wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull, wrote the book One and The Bridge Across Forever, in which he talks about having met his soulmate, Leslie Parrish, who was an actress. And they had all of these serendipitous, interesting ways that they found each other and came together, and they shared so many interesting things where they went into other worlds beyond this world, and they knew each other, I believe, in other lifetimes. Those books are really interesting and fun. And when you read them, you would think that they would be together forever. That's another soulmate myth, that you will be together forever. Richard Bach and Leslie Parrish Bach were together for 21 years. And then they were done. And they parted amicably. She needed to go on her way, and he needed to go on his way. And I just read an interview with him on Amazon.com in which he talked about soulmates are not necessarily together forever. When their mission is done, when they've learned everything that they can learn from each other, they may indeed move on. And to someone who has this belief that safety comes in staying in a relationship that's absolutely permanent, my soulmate will provide me with that absolute safety for my entire life, and I won't ever have to face being alone again. There's another soulmate myth, that we'll be together forever, and this soulmate will guarantee that. They parted and they went their separate ways in love. Just like they came together in love, they parted and went their separate ways in love. And I have that with my soulmate, the one I'm with now. It has never felt right for us to get married. And for a while there, I wanted to get married because I wanted that security. I had those ego needs. I wasn't being my true self. I was coming out of ego, and I was feeling like he had to provide me that security. He had to give me that ring, and that way I would feel safe, and I would feel whole because I was married. But being the soulmate that he is, being the person that actually gives me what I need on a soul level, not what my ego wants are, because the ego will want and want and want, and when it gets one thing that it wants, it tries, and then it will get another thing, and then another thing, and then another thing. The ego is never satisfied. But with my soulmate refusing to get married to me because it just didn't feel right, it wasn't that he didn't love me. He loves me deeply, and he loves me so deeply that he didn't marry me just for the sake of a sheet of paper or a ring that would meet my ego needs. And what that did for me was forced me right up against my own self-doubt, my own self-hatred, my own insecurity, and it helped me work it through. Because as I forgave him for not giving me what I wanted, I came into loving myself and feeling secure within myself. And instead of seeking the love from my soulmate, I got it from myself. And we're still together. And we may be together for the rest of our lives, or we may be together until tomorrow. We have a relationship in which we know that the highest form of love does not bind anybody or keep them as a possession or keep them from moving on to their highest good. We know that because our souls have evolved together in this relationship through our fights. So this myth that you won't fight with your soulmate, it's not true. In fact, you will fight with your soulmate about every single thing that's unhealed in you if you're expecting your soulmate to be your happiness. I've needed a relationship. Having a beautiful, wonderful soulmate relationship was the absolute most important thing in my entire life. And I had to let go of that idea. I had to let go of believing that my soulmate was what was making me happy, that this relationship was what was making my life whole. Because as long as I believed that, I was in the ego thought system, that wrong-minded thought system that feels separate from God, that feels less than, that feels weak and scared. So my soulmate, by saying, no, let's not get married, let's just commit for today, gave me what I truly needed. And when I forgave myself for feeling weak and insecure, and I forgave myself for thinking that I was this dream figure walking around this life being scared, and I learned to identify with the right mind in me, the higher self in me, and realize that that is who I am, and that is truly my biggest soulmate. Our biggest soulmate is our own higher self. When I came to that, then my relationship with my soulmate here at this level became wonderful. Even though we fight every once in a while, just like we fought last week, because more of our guilt and shame needed to be released from the ego level. More of the ego needed to be let go so that we could move into our higher selves. And your soulmate is your best friend because your soulmate will mirror that for you and allow you to see things that you still haven't seen in yourself. Another thing about soulmates is we think that they should look like a happy couple, and that's not necessarily true. I really think that O.J. Simpson and Nicole Brown Simpson were soulmates. Now, that might seem like heresy to people who hold the idea that soulmates are sweet and loving and it's a great thing. But I remember reading an interview where Nicole's sister said, he is going to kill me and he is going to get away with it because he is O.J. Simpson. Now, what was that all about? If we look at life as a dream, and we look at it as if we are our higher selves looking at the dream instead of being the dream figures, how did Nicole Simpson know that OJ was going to kill her and that he would get off? How did she know that? Even though he was acquitted, most of us don't believe that he's innocent. But so how did she know that that was going to happen? One way of looking at that is that the dream, the movie, is already written. It's already been filmed. So she was just looking at things that had already happened. Perhaps, and it would have been nice, had she and OJ chosen differently, chosen love instead of fear, chosen to not identify with these dream figures that want to attack and kill each other. O.J. Simpson and Nicole Brown Simpson are you and me. There's a part of all of us that wants to attack and kill. And we don't look at it. And we would rather say, well, I'm not like that. And we'd rather put it all on a person who has done it and say, well, he's the bad guy, not me. It's not true. We're all OJ and we're all Nicole, because that is what the ego thought system is. The ego thought system wants to attack and hurt, even if it's your soulmate. OJ Simpson could not deal with Nicole being with another man. And we can say that, okay, maybe he was just a jealous man, a crazy man, a wild man who would kill. But there's a part of all of us that is like that. Who among us hasn't been jealous or really, really upset or said, I wish that person was dead, or I could just kill you right now? We've all done that. And thankfully, we don't act it out. But the whole point of the ego thought system is that it's in all of us. And when we identify with that thought system, or we project it out onto people like OJ and say, oh, well, he's like that, but I'm not. When we do that, we are blocking our higher self. Our higher self is love. And only through coming from our higher self can we be and act like the true love that we are. But in our soulmate relationships, if we think we've lost our soulmate and that soulmate is really important to us, we act like nuts. We act crazy. Don't all of us know people who have gotten divorced? And in the divorce, those people are just not themselves, quote unquote. They act like lunatics. They do all kinds of things. They get personal protection orders on each other. They hate each other. They steal money from each other. They steal the kids from each other. They put the kids in the middle. They badmouth their former beloveds to all their friends. They hate the person they once loved. There's a 50% divorce rate, and most divorces are not real pretty. That's the ego thought system. A lot of people who are married are soulmates. And now that they're getting divorced, he really wasn't my soulmate after all. Not necessarily so. He may have been your soulmate. It's a myth that soulmates get along perfectly. It's a myth that soulmates don't attack each other. Closer to the truth is that soulmates will attack each other, unless they're so pure and so evolved that they're coming from the right mind of love all the time. And again, what is the remedy to this? It's forgiveness. Had OJ and Nicole been able to forgive each other, that murder may not have happened. That script might have changed. That dream may have had a happy ending. They had kids together. Those kids loved their dad and their mom. And those kids lost their mom. That is horrifying. It's just horrifying. But soulmates, that doesn't mean that they weren't soulmates. They probably loved each other deeply at one point, and at one point thought, we will love each other forever. That's usually what people do that have kids together. They conceive the kids in love. They want the kids. But then, because we carry all of this guilt and we carry all of this shame inside of us, then we start attacking each other with it. So unless we face down that ego thought system and we choose with our right mind, choose love instead of fear, choose love instead of guilt, then we aren't going to make our soulmate relationships work without that. So all of these myths that we've gone over tonight, that soulmates love each other unconditionally and don't attack each other, that finding your soulmate will make you happy, that if there's abuse in your soul, in your relationship, it can't be a soulmate, or that you will be together forever, those are myths. They don't last. We're on Blog Talk Radio with the Poetic Energy Network. This is Breaking Free with Lori Coburn. And We invite your calls or your questions at 917-932-8881. And my website is lauricoburn.com. That's L-O-R-R-I, two R's, Coburn, C-O-B-U-R-N. And on Facebook, my Facebook page is Breaking Free, How Forgiveness and A Course in Miracles Can Set You Free. And my soulmate page is Even Soulmates Get the Blues. Soulmates, we're going to be happy once we find them. Not so. However, when we find them, they are indeed our biggest gifts. They're our biggest teachers. They're the people that can bring us to forgiveness. And in that sense, our soulmate is the absolute most wonderful thing we can find. And we can love unconditionally through forgiveness. Take a look again at another set of soulmates, Bill Clinton and Hillary Rodham Clinton. And yet Bill Clinton is a powerful guy, and a lot of powerful guys and charismatic guys screw around. Does that mean he doesn't love Hillary? Does that mean he and Hillary aren't soulmates because he screwed around? I don't think so. I think they're very strong soulmates. In fact, they may be twin flames. Their path is not necessarily the romantic soulmates. It doesn't seem like the romance between them is as strong as, say, between Michelle and Barack Obama or between Nancy and Ronald Reagan. But Hillary and Bill are absolutely connected. They are so joined in their souls. They have this mission together. And you can see in the way that Bill Clinton talks about Hillary how much he admires and respects her and thinks that she is just one of the most brilliant women on the planet, which a lot of people would agree with. And if you're of the different political persuasion, you may think she's one of the most horrible politicians on the planet. But that's neither here nor there, because those are all ego judgments. If you think she's wonderful, that's an ego judgment. If you think she's horrible, that's an ego judgment. But Bill and Hillary are soulmates, and yet Bill still went out on her. So where does that leave us? If a soulmate relationship is the ticket to finding your dreams, because they sure have followed their dreams together to the White House, to being Secretary of State, to changing the world. They followed their dreams, and yet they hurt each other deeply. When Bill went out on Hillary, and then he lied about it in public, and then he admitted it, they went through this period where Hillary was absolutely furious. And there was this one scene where they were walking to Air Force One, and you could just see the steely expression on Hillary's face and how she was just seething inside. And yet she was trying to hold it together. And I remember a CBS 60 Minutes interview where the guy said to her, well, why do, or no, maybe it was Barbara Walters. That's right. Barbara Walters said, why do you stay with him? And she said, because he makes me laugh, and he makes me feel good, and he's the one I like to be with. And so she used forgiveness to stay with her man, to stay with this man that she loved in spite of his human flaws, in spite of her public humiliation. It would be hard enough if your husband had an affair, much less to have it dragged around in public, and then you have to show your face. That's really hard. That calls for some good forgiveness. However, the forgiveness that A Course in Miracles calls on us to do is to look at the dream and to look at how we have chosen to act out these roles in this dream like it's a movie. And so Bill had this role as president, and Hillary had this role as First Lady and now as Secretary of State. And in that dream, Bill thinks he's this powerful man, And as powerful men often do, they have a very high sex drive. They have a lot of testosterone. And it's hard for them to stick to one woman. And so Bill, needing to have some of those ego needs, those sexual needs, those power mongering or excitement needs or whatever needs it was that he had, needs to sabotage himself, needs to play on the edge or take a risk, to risk his presidency by doing something stupid and playing around with an intern. Excuse me. Bill had those thoughts. Bill had those ego things that led him to do something that was not so kosher. But if you can step back and choose love, and they both chose love in the end, they both had to choose forgiveness of themselves. Bill talks about in his memoir or in his autobiography, he talks about going to therapy and realizing how he had sabotaged himself and was hurting himself by these kinds of behaviors, and that really helped him. And it's the same type of thing. When we step back and we realize we think we're these dream figures and we have to forgive ourselves for falsely identifying with these roles in the dream that we have taken on, because every dream role involves conflict, sabotage, self-destruction, hurt, pain, shame. Every single dream role we take on involves that, even if you're the president of the United States, even if you're one of the most powerful people in the world as Secretary of State, even if you're soulmates, even if you have this soulmate relationship that is very deep and very loving, you still have problems that you have to look at and forgive, because that ego thought system wants to rip everything to shreds. And if Hillary and Bill had gotten divorced, that would have affected both of them quite a bit in their careers. And their drives, their primary path is probably not the romance like we talked about, but their primary path as partners, as soulmates, has been the political path, the social changers, the huge, big figures in the dream, the world changers, world humanitarians. And they did that, and they do that together. And yet their soulmate relationship could have absolutely gone to pieces and been torn to shreds, but they chose love, and they chose forgiveness. They chose to step out of their ego needs and say, I stay with him because I truly do love him. We have both sides to ourselves. Our souls truly love each other. Our higher selves truly love each other. No matter what the other person has done to us, there's a part of us that truly loves them. I believe on the other side that Nicole Brown Simpson, in her soul, truly loves O.J. Simpson. And O.J. truly loves Nicole. And I don't know how he feels about himself, but I hope he has forgiven himself. Because forgiveness is the only way out of the dream. Forgiveness is the only way out of the ego thought system. We have to forgive that hatred, forgive that shame, forgive that guilt. And by doing that, we remove the blocks to the awareness of ourselves as love, as our higher selves. We don't have to seek for love in our soulmate. When we forgive ourselves and we forgive our soulmates for what we think we've done to each other, then we are the love that we seek, and we become our own soulmate as our higher self. So the myths about soulmates, that they love each other unconditionally at this level, not at this level. On the soul level, yes. At this level, they're more likely to attack. That they'll live happily ever after, not at this level, unless they choose to forgive. But with forgiveness, yes, they will live happily ever after. That they're together forever, not necessarily, but in their souls they're together forever. As Richard Bach, the author of Jonathan Livingston Seagull, said, I know that in my soul level, Leslie and I are together forever. We are soulmates. And this is the end of our show tonight. I appreciate you listening in. My website is lauriecoburn.com, and thank you very much.